go!
And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about Formula One, as well as travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm in Perth in Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive fan, and once again, I am in a very dark Norway today.
The time difference. And this week, I'm so excited for us to be chatting to Rianna O'Meara Hunt. From the age of 16, Rianna has made motorsport history on three separate occasions in three different countries, and she's just recently uprooted her life in New Zealand and moved to the UK to follow her racing dreams. So with a big warm welcome to the show, Rianna.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm really excited to be here.
Look, Rianna, I've been looking through your CV and I'm so impressed. Female racing drivers, I bow down to you guys. I'm really, really excited to hear so much more about everything that you've done. So again, welcome to the show. But my first question is, I'm looking at you right now. I can see you're sitting in what us Australians would call a donga. So I don't know, a shipping container. So I'm assuming you are at a racetrack somewhere. Am I right?
Yes, you are completely right. I've got a little new adventure happening this year. At the end of 2024, I was contacted by a team called Team Drogba in the E1 series. It's a franchise of Formula E and Extreme E, but we're actually racing boats.
What?
I'm going to be racing water. For some of the year, which is going to be a new challenge. I know. Came out the blue, but I think it's a great way to test my boundaries and test my limits. I'm learning a new skill. So this year I'm part of Team Drogba of four drivers, and we'll see how it goes.
That's absolutely incredible.
Like what sort size boats? Like how big are they? How fast do they go? Tell us.
The boats are pretty massive. They design them specifically for E1. So they're electric boats. We go about, I would say, 80K an hour on the water. And the battery has to be charged between each as we are in the electric phase. So the races are probably about 7 laps. And we work as a female and male duo in the boat.
Right.
So we are in a team where whoever performs the best out of us four drivers are in the boat for the race weekend. So it's going to be fun.
Oh, my goodness.
Such a plot twist.
I know. Wow.
The news came out yesterday.
Breaking news. How does driving a boat compare to driving your cars, race cars? And how do you transfer your skills over to that?
It feels obviously quite a lot different. I feel like your basic lines of a race course are pretty similar. I've been lucky to grow up through karting because you really have to feel the kart under your bum and under your legs to see what it's doing and what the changes have done to it. And it's kind of similar on the water. You really need to not react to what the boat's doing, but preempt what it's going to do. So we're on foils. So the boat's actually up in the air. And we need to preempt the feeling of it starting to crash when it gets to a certain K number. I'm getting a feel for it. The team are quite happy with how I'm going so far and my pace that I'm showing. So it's all promising signs, but we are finishing our last day of training today. And then we get into the proper free practice. So yeah, it's going to be good.
If you can't tell by my face, I'm just like completely blown away right now.
I know. I was not expecting any of this either. So I guess with the race, because you're, you know, racing in electric boats, is the charging part of the race as well? Like, do you need to be strategic or do you have enough charge to complete all of the laps and the race?
Yeah. So we have enough charge to complete the laps. But then the boat has to charge for about an hour. So there's going to be 4 or 5 boats out in each race. And there's a total of 10 teams. So while the next set of heats go out, we're charging the boat. The next driver goes in. He does the race, charge the boat. I'll jump in, do a race. And we're kind of like working as a team to collect points over the weekend for a championship.
Wow. Where are you right now?
I'm in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia at the moment, but it's happening all around the world. So it's a worldwide series. So exactly like Formula E. So we're in Jeddah. We go to Doha in February. And then we kind of stay mostly in Europe. So Monaco, Italy, there's talks of potentially Bahamas maybe, which will be pretty cool. And then to finish, we're finishing in Miami.
Wow.
Yeah, traveling everywhere, which is going to be awesome.
I have some Googling to do on this.
It's season two, so it's still pretty fresh. All the teams are owned by a famous representative. So I'm with Didier Drogba, the footballer for Chelsea. And there's teams owned by Rafa Nadal, Will Smith, and so on and so on. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
This is wild. I know Extreme E and followed that for a little bit. We had Australian Molly Taylor racing that for a while. And I know that some of those teams are owned by, like, Nico Rosberg has a team and Lewis Hamilton has a team. With the Extreme E, there's a team of two, one woman and one male driver. Is it the same in one, what you're doing?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So it is literally the same. So it's the same entity. So the people that started Formula E started Extreme E and now have started E1.
Right. And are you on open water in the ocean or is it all rivers or lakes or?
Here we're in like a marina. It's fresh water. It's not salt, but we can go into the ocean.
And I imagine that would play a part in the race and the feel of the boat and everything, depending on whether you're on fresh water or salt water, because they're different densities. There's, you know, all sorts of different makeup to the water.
Exactly. So, yeah, which I'm yet to find out. So it's going to be an interesting year of lots of learning. It's going to be good.
Oh my God. So from four wheels to the water. That's amazing.
Very different.
You're very new to E1. But you're not so new to driving four wheels. And how did you get your start in racing, in four wheels, in karting?
I grew up, funny enough, not in a motorsport family. And one of my dad's friends brought a race car and asked if he wanted to go halves in it. My dad being my dad, he was very, let's go, let's give it a go. I mean, never done karting, never done anything. But I grew up maybe from the age of four, watching him race around New Zealand in a series called Mini Challenge. I just loved it. It was exactly what I loved doing. I loved being there, watching my dad. I always looked up to him as an only child, being able to support him. And I kind of thrived being at the track. You know, I loved getting my hands dirty and washing the car and trying to help the mechanics and things. So that friend of his said, oh, you should bring her up to the go-kart track in Wellington. We were there at 8 years old. He finally took me after lots of begging and asking for me to take me. And there was a go-kart on sale that day that I went to this race event. And I had a go at the end of the day. And after that session, it was mine. And we went home. And it never stopped.
You had one go in a go-kart, bought a go-kart, and that was the start.
Yeah, pretty much. Funny story about that is that by accident, the throttle cable got stuck on. And no one knew. Obviously, I'd never been in a go-kart. I had no idea. So I was actually riffing around this go-kart track really quickly. And she was like, she's a natural. Like, oh my gosh, I need to get her in the speed on that.
You're not able to stop. Like, you can't slow down, is it?
No, exactly right. So I don't know. I went around for eight laps or so. And by the ninth lap, I obviously couldn't hang on anymore. And I went up this bank. And eat all this gorse and like, it wasn't pretty, but I still wanted to go back. So,
oh my gosh. All the props to you for not being scared off by the fact that your throttle was stuck on the very first time you got in a go-kart. What are the chances?
I know.
You sound like your father's daughter though. Your dad just went, okay, I'm going to buy a race car and go racing. Why not? And he got a go-kart.
Exactly. Just give it a go, you know. Let's go and race boats. Let's give it a go.
So as an eight-year-old in a car with a throttle that won't go off to making history three times in motorsport, tell us your story. What was the first history-making moment?
It was actually in Australia, in Adelaide. We went over for what is called the Rotax Pro Tour Challenge. It's a I want to say 7 or 8 round series. And if you win the championship, you win a ticket to the Rotax World Finals. I was competing in this from the age of 16. And we went to Adelaide in South Australia to a track called Bolivar that I'd actually never been to before. We were racing the final, but it had just rained and the track was half wet, half dry. And coming from New Zealand, where it rains quite a lot, I could kind of work out where the driest line was. Lots of the other drivers were kind of getting like slipped in the puddles or not taking the correct line. So I kind of made my way up at the start. And by maybe 10 laps in, I was in the lead and in the lead by quite a long way. So I was literally looking at the countdown lap. It was like a 28 lap race and had 18 laps to go. And I was like, this is the slowest race of my life. I just need this to be over now.
Oh, it's so lonely at the front.
The last lap, I was like, please nothing fall off. Like, you're literally hearing the chain moving. You're hearing every bolt. You're just, please, please stay on. And it did. And I was the first ever junior female to win a state title. I was the champion of South Australia, which was an amazing feeling at 16 years old. And to be honest, when it happened, I had no idea what I just did. And it probably didn't hit me until a year or so later when they're like, you know, you literally made history for women and for New Zealand and Australia. And I was just like, yeah, that's really cool.
Oh, that's so cool. That would have felt amazing. But yeah, you're just in the moment and just unaware of the enormity of the moment.
And being so young, I don't think you grasp the concept. You're like, oh, that's cool, but like on to the next, you know?
Yeah.
And then I was, well, I wouldn't say lucky enough, but I put in the hard work that same year and I created history in New Zealand by being the first woman to win a Rotax Max Challenge for the junior category, which again was unbelievable and kind of the same thing. I didn't realize what I did until like a couple of years later. But yeah, those were the first two and they happened very close to each other, which is not so normal. But yeah, that's kind of how it kickstarted off really.
And did that just reinforce your decision that racing's what I want to do? I want this to be my life.
Yeah, it definitely did. I've always known the racetrack to kind of be my home, where I feel my most confident and where I feel like I can walk into a room and know exactly what I'm talking about and not have a question in my head, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
School was never really my scene, but racing was somewhere that I had a really good close group of friends and I felt comfortable, confident. So it was always like something I knew I wanted in my life. But when those history making moments kind of happened, I was like, okay, well, there's actually something here. And I've put in a lot of hard work. From the age of 8, I was traveling around probably 30 weekends of the year racing. Keep me out of trouble. That's all my parents always say. So I didn't really have much of a life outside of racing and my racing friends. I fell in love with the sport the minute I did it at 8 years old. And I've always wanted it to be my thing.
You found racing was your thing. What were your goalposts as a karter? You start in go-karting. Where did you see yourself? Did you have any grand visions? You know, young boys get in a go-kart and think, I want to race Formula One. That's my goal. Was that your goal? Or
to be honest, I'm not the best person at looking so far in the future. I'm really a person that's in the moment. So my goal was always to win New Zealand championships and then go on to winning Australian championships. When I created history, that was really cool. But I wanted to get to that Rotax Pro Tour Grand Final. And that was the goal growing up. I made it to the ROC. So it's a different engine, a ROC engine Grand Final, like a World Championships in 2019, which was amazing. And when that happened, I was like, okay, well, that's kind of where I looked to. And I haven't got many plans other than that. So I was a little bit stuck and I was like, what am I going to do? Like, should I move into cars? And you're always told when you're growing up, you should move into cars as soon as you can. And when I was 2019, I was 18. So that's really old to move into cars, which sounds ridiculous. But I was like, oh, am I too late? Is it too late to make the move? And then obviously COVID. I was supposed to go to Italy to race with an Italian team in 2020. And obviously that didn't happen. I actually got approached by a team in New Zealand to do some car racing for them. So I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to grab this opportunity while it's here. And I'm going to make a plan once I know where I'm sitting. And since then, my goal has always been to go to Le Mans 24 and race there as the first ever Kiwi female to go and do that. So no one else has done it before. And I feel like I've got the history-making achievements behind me already. I've got ways to be able to make some stuff happen. And I back myself to be able to do that. But I'm slowly learning that there's not one pathway to get there. I was always very tin top heavy, GTs. I want to be in GTs 24/7. Without saying too much, there's a skew to start heading into single seaters.
So that's a little cryptic clue that you've dropped there, is it? Or
don't know. Maybe we'll find out.
Let's hope that happens for you then, and that dream, that skew, actually turns into something real. We'll be watching on and cheering from the sidelines. So yeah, good luck with that one.
Thank you.
Let's change tack into Formula One for a bit.
Mm.
So you didn't grow up in a motorsport family. I didn't grow up in a motorsport family either. When I started working in motorsport and became totally addicted to Formula One, my dad thought I'd knocked my head or something had happened to me. He was like, what? You're watching cars go round and round?
Are you sure?
Yeah, exactly. Did you grow up watching Formula One, or after you started karting, when did your interest in F1 start?
When my dad started racing, to be honest, as a family, we all started watching racing. I've been watching, you know, supercars and Formula One and IndyCar since I was 10, maybe, as probably my first memory. I've always loved the idea of it being so prestigious, you know, only a certain amount of drivers get in, and that's the best of the best. And they've worked hard behind the scenes to get there, not just driving wise, but finding the money and sponsorship and getting a brand for themselves. And I have seen firsthand how hard Liam has worked since the age of 14 to get to where he is now. And
so this is Liam Lawson.
Liam Lawson.
Fellow Kiwi. Yeah.
Yes, our fellow Kiwi. I mean, I've always found it impressive, and the racing has always been really really good racing. I feel like maybe over the last couple of years, it's gotten a little bit, you kind of know who's going to win, but the battles in the mid-pack are amazing.
Especially this year. Well, this year just gone. You've obviously mentioned Liam Lawson. You clearly know Liam Lawson. He's been put in the Red Bull seat. How did you feel hearing that announcement?
It was amazing to hear. I grew up racing Liam, and we were really, really close when we were younger and still talk. You know, it's another bit of New Zealand history. You know, we're achieving in supercars. We've got three drivers in Indy. Sir Van Gisbergen has gone over, smashed in NASCAR. And now Liam has gone on to Formula One, not only just smashed it out the park in his reserve drives, but is now in the main game Red Bull seat. So I think New Zealand as a country is really pushing above their weight in motorsport. And we're so small. We're on the other side of the world from everybody. So it's nice to see that you guys, you Australians, know how competitive New Zealanders are. So.
Yes, totally. But for a country so small, what New Zealand achieves in the sporting world, it's phenomenal, honestly. The sporting achievements of New Zealand have put it on the map, and, you know, that and Lord of the Rings. So you grew up with Liam Lawson. Were you karting against him? Did you race with him?
Yeah. So we're the same age, or similar ages. I think maybe he's a year younger. So we're always racing each other, beating each other, racing nice and closely. He was always a very fair racer. Maybe sneakily beat him a couple of times, but we'll
yay. Was there one win against Liam that sticks in your memory?
To be honest, it was when we were like 12. Liam stepped out of karting really early. You know how I was saying you step into cars really early? He stepped out when he was about 14 years old to go into that car racing dream. I always enjoyed racing him. I enjoyed racing Matt Payne and Ryan Wood and all of those guys as well, and supercars. So I feel like we've come from a rich year of racing. I think there's a lot of achievements to be had in this year group, which is really exciting.
But I mean, gosh, he's in with the big boys now, isn't he? So he's got a big year ahead of him. We wish him luck. It'd be nice for Max to have a competitive teammate. I'm excited to watch on this season.
I think some moments are going to be stirred for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you said it. Liam looks very hungry. And from everything that I've seen of the way that he presents himself and the way that he drives, he's got a little bit of fire behind his backside to get some results there. And I think there could be some hairy moments.
Yeah, he's not afraid to get his elbows out. And he's proven that already. With the few races he has had in Formula One. So, yeah, 2025 and the Red Bull team's going to be, I reckon there might be some fireworks and I'm excited to see it.
It's going to be worth a watch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So you grew up watching racing. You're a racer yourself. Have you watched Drive to Survive? And what do you think of the series?
Drive to Survive has been amazing for the sport. I think it's really shone a light on not just what driving is, but also the politics and how much a team makes a difference. Lots of people think racing is just about the driver. It's actually about the whole wider team around you. You know, they're all there because they want to win a championship too. And I think that's really forgotten. And I think that's what Drive to Survive has really brung to the motorsport community. And it's also put it on a stepladder. As you said, there's so many people now that watch racing because of Drive to Survive. They've got their favorite drivers and their favorite teams because what has been said on Drive to Survive, whether that be a little bit pent up as a reality TV show or not, sure. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think you get the general consensus of, you know, what happens behind the scenes and a little bit more of an in-depth understanding of what actually it takes to drive these cars and to be at the racetrack for this long and the hours that the teams go through. You know, the mechanics can be there from 6 a.m. and not go home until 4 a.m., sleep for 2 hours and then come back.
Especially if they're working on Colapinto's car. I'm sure that's happened to the mechanics lots of times.
There's probably not even 2 hours sleep. I think the behind the scenes, like any sport or anything in life, the more you know about it, the more interest you're going to have in it, right? Because I know for me, Drive to Survive was pretty much the reason that I got into watching Formula One. And because of that, I watch Formula Two, I watch Formula Three. I've been known to have the Porsche Carrera Cup on TV. It's just the more you know, the more interest you take in it, because you can sit there and understand it and not just look at it and think, oh, look, there's some cars going round and round a track.
Exactly.
Referring to my dad, exactly right. Drive to Survive is the gateway drug to Formula One, 100%.
I think more championships need to get onto the same level as that. I think there needs to be, you've got these single seaters. I think there needs to be something about Extreme E or E1. I think there needs to be something about the WEC world, like the World Endurance Championship that goes around with the GT cars. I think it could be massive, really massive.
Obviously, now we've got the Formula One Drivers Academy headed up by Susie Wool. And as we've discussed before on the podcast, women are able to race Formula One if they have the opportunity and if they have the seat and if they've come up and they're proving themselves to be good drivers. But it just doesn't necessarily always happen. Well, it doesn't happen. What are your thoughts on Formula Academy?
It's a great initiative. I think Susie has done an amazing job at pushing this as well as she has. I think she's got all the right resources and she can really crack into opportunities that other people couldn't and weren't ready and prepared to put in the effort that she has to make it so big. I really agree with what they're doing. I think a woman could drive Formula One, no shot about it. And I think we just need to make the right pathway. You know, like women drivers are so different to men, not only physically, but with their mental game as well. And there's like little things, you know, the pedal sets in an F1 car or a single seater are massive because boys' feet are usually quite big. So our ball of the foot might only reach here. So we can't push the pedal as well as they can. So there's little things that need to be improved, I think. But what she's been able to do for the women that have been racing at F1 Academy is outstanding. They've made a brand for themselves. They're out there, they're known, they have all this access to Formula One teams and engineers and data, and they all got selected to go chess Formula E, and they're getting all these amazing opportunities because of what she's done. So I think it's an outstanding championship.
I literally just got goosebumps as you were saying that.
It's so good.
And just to hear someone show such respect to Susie, you're a racer, so it means a lot coming from you to hear that kind of respect. And a lot of the things that you're saying are brand new to us non-racers.
Good on her. I think it's brilliant. Is the Formula One Academy something you've got your sights set on, Rihanna?
I think in an ideal world, it would be amazing to be able to go and do the Formula One Academy. I am 23 and the CAFOF is 25. So I've got pretty much a year to see if that could be a possibility. So yeah, this year is going to be all about marketing and getting the right testing to see if that could possibly be a possibility in the future. But we'll see.
Oh, we wish you the very best of luck with that.
Thank you.
There was a mention of single seaters, so I'm just going to watch this space. I got to watch the Formula Academy when I was in Qatar, and it was just so exciting to see, or just to know that I was watching women racing and watching this wonderful organization that's really working hard to do this for the female racers. There was just a very different feeling to watching, you know, Formula 3 or Formula 1, or it was really cool.
You were there trackside watching history unfold, Mon. It's very cool.
They didn't accidentally announce the world champion. They didn't race the final race and they handed over the championship because that final race couldn't happen. I think there was a time limit and they had to cancel it, but then they raced that final race in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, but she still pulled it off even under all that pressure. And Abby did amazing.
Abby pulled it off?
She did pull it off. You're waiting for that moment. I can see.
You could just see my face light up. I was like, I got a joke in.
Rihanna, right now you're in Saudi. Will you have a chance to get away, I was about to say from the track, but you're racing on water, like get away from the team and go exploring at all? Do you get to do any tourist activities, experience a destination at all, or is it all business and then you've got to go to the next place?
It's pretty much business, but I'm hoping that we have maybe 1 or 2 days next week that we're not doing too much. Well, we'll see. Hopefully, fingers crossed. I would love to get to like the desert and go on the quad bikes and go into the sand and drive some fast quad bikes or something like that.
So, Rihanna, let's move into the final three. These are three questions that we ask all our guests on the podcast. So the first question is, if you could travel for a holiday to any Formula One destination, whether it's race week or not, whether it's a current race on the calendar or not, which place would you choose and why?
I would probably go with Spa, not so much for the holiday destination, but because it's such an iconic racing track. As a racing driver, that's a lot of people's like, wow, I really want to go and race Spa. It's such an iconic track in racing. And if you perform at Spa, you know, you're pretty up there. You're an elite because it's such a complex track, you know, with all the undulation and the speed. And it's really on the limit. And if you crash there, as we know, you crash big and it can have big consequences, which isn't fun for anybody. You know, it's not the thing that you want to focus on, but it's also what us drivers drive on. You know, we love the adrenaline and the risk, and it's all a part of it, and we know that. I definitely Spa. I'd love to go and watch the Formula One and watch Carrera Cup there and get some tips maybe for when I get there.
I love that as a racing driver, your immediate thought about where you'd want to travel to is racing focused. It's absolutely brilliant. I love it.
Oh, and if you could holiday with any Formula One driver, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, good question. I think Kimi Raikkonen is a character.
The Iceman.
Or Michael Schumacher.
Mm.
Could you imagine the conversation with Kimi Raikkonen, though? No.
It might be a silent holiday. Yeah.
He'd probably get lots of reading done. Oh, I love Kimi.
Oh, me too. But Michael Schumacher, wouldn't that just be incredible? The wealth of knowledge that he has. I have one last question for you. If you were to cook any Formula One themed meal from any of the countries that Formula One travels to, What would you choose and why?
I am a sucker for a good Italian pasta. A big sucker for like a nice fettuccine or spaghetti bolognese or just something like that. I think it's like a nice home meal, but when you have an Italy, chef's kiss.
Oh, well, on that, I think we'll wrap up. Thank you so much, Rihanna, for taking time to come on the podcast. It's been an absolute delight to chat to you and hear about how you got into racing and what you're doing now. And we wish you the very best of luck with your racing career. And we can't wait to watch where it takes you.
Thank you so much, guys. I really enjoyed being on here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rihanna. And thank you so much for listening, guys. If you liked our podcast, please leave a review and a rating for us on any of your favorite podcast listening apps. It always really, really helps. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, and TikTok for some behind the scenes action, some fun clips from our podcast. Just search for And Away We Go Podcast and you'll find us there. You can also email us on andawaywego f1podcast@gmail.com. You can find all the links to our social media in our show notes.
Thank you, Mon. Thank you, Rihanna. And thank you for having us in your ears. Until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.